Today's episode of the Can Be Now podcast is brought to you by Gustafson Insurance, business, home, and auto insurance made simple. For a free quote, call 503-266-2216.
How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
It's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
Clackamas County held an election on Tuesday night, but if you missed it, you weren't alone. Over 80% of registered voters failed to file ballots before the 8 p.m. deadline. The dismal turnout barely cracked 18%, but this was sadly predictable. It's often the norm for May off-year elections, meaning elections with no primary races for state or national offices. Bad as it was, Clackamas County turnout was actually 2 points higher than statewide races, and the turnout for Can Be School District voters was higher still at just north of 22%. The truth is that low voter turnout is a symptom of a larger lack of civic engagement. Most of the special district races on Clackamas County ballots were uncontested, and as much as I, as a journalist, am bound to beat the drum of exercise your right to vote, even I have to admit it's hard to give people grief for not voting when there's so little to vote on. Even so, the May 2019 election will have consequences locally, the primary one being a shakeup to the Can Be School Board. New faces were already expected as a trio of newcomers had filed to replace incumbent Diane Downs, Don Deppner, Art Marine, and Angie Miles. After the final results were tallied late Tuesday night, Dawn emerged victorious from the tight three-way race. She took home 38% of the vote, while Art and Angie claimed 36% and 26% respectively. With turnout so low, the percentages don't necessarily tell the whole story. Fewer than 100 votes separated Art and Dawn. A financial advisor by trade, Dawn is probably best known locally as the founder of Operation Snuggle, an annual event that makes blankets for homeless kids in the Can Be School District. In a phone interview Wednesday, she thanked the community for their support and her fellow candidates for their willingness to serve.
I'm excited to step into the role of Can Be School Board director. I'm really thankful for those who supported me through this journey and went door to door and put up signs and just visited with me and gave me encouragement, and I really appreciate those who questioned me, that decided to seek out and meet with me when I asked them to. That to me means everything. Get to know me as a candidate and a person, I think, is so important, and I would ask folks to continue to do that.
Dawn, who has also served on several other local boards, including Can Be Fire, said this was the most contentious campaign she's ever been part of, not because of her opponents, but because of questions from constituents, mainly online, that made her feel, in her words, attacked.
Yeah, it was very stressful. I felt like I had to defend my character, quite a bit through the whole process. And I think, unfortunately, we see people who make an opinion about somebody without knowing them directly or even claiming to know them. And it's always better, I think, when we can sit down eye to eye and look at each other in the face and have a conversation. I think that that's so important. And I hope that we get to continue to do that. But it's hard. It's hard to be put in that position. And unfortunately, that's politics. And I hope that we can bring some civility back to politics. It should not be this way. I don't feel that anybody that wants to step up should be hammered the way that I was. I feel like if folks want to know my heart and know my passion and where I stand, then sit down and have a meeting with me. Let's not make assumptions online. That is so wrong.
Her response, she says, was to attempt to meet face to face with the people criticizing her. And when this happened, it actually went really well.
Two folks that I reached out to and said, hey, can we visit rather than have this, conversation online or the bullying. As soon as I did that and we talked, the conversations went really well. Like I just, when you can't look at somebody in the eye and know their heart and, can't hear the tone in their voice, it takes away so much to be hiding behind a keyboard and making accusations. It's horrible.
For their parts, Art and Angie were gracious in defeat.
I did get an opportunity to speak to Dawn this morning, and so she was very gracious, and I congratulated her, and I've exchanged, I left a voicemail for Angie and thanked her for such a positive campaign, and she responded back too. So I definitely want to thank all my supporters, the, you know, people that I never expected to be so supportive and to reach out did, and I'm really thankful, and I wish there was an adequate way to thank them, because I feel like whatever I do is going to be insufficient. The community as a whole, I'm not worried about Dawn winning this seat. I think she'll do a fine job. You know, I think the board will work out just fine.
Thank you to everyone who took the time to vote in this election. Angie said, "Your participation makes a difference to our community. Running for school board has been such an amazing process. Running alongside Art Marine and Dawn Deppner has shown me how dedicated and talented our community is. Anyone willing to donate time to help others offer something valuable to our school district. I am excited to support Dawn Deppner as she joins the board. I will continue to support our schools and be an advocate for our students. Thank you so much to all my supporters during this campaign. I'm so appreciative of the opportunity to run." The most surprising outcome was Stephanie Carlson's defeat of Andrea Weber, another close race with only 80 or so votes separating the two candidates. The results were surprising not just because incumbents like Weber typically have the advantage over newcomers, but also because Carlson wasn't actually running. She filed to run, but communicated to local media last month that she had changed her mind, though it was past the deadline to be removed from the ballot and voter pamphlet. A flyer purportedly paid for and circulated by the Clackamas County Republican Party reiterated that Carlson had withdrawn and put forth someone else, John H. Jones III, as a write-in candidate. Carlson has not yet returned our request for comment, but we have heard from several of her friends and supporters who say she plans to accept the results of the election and serve on the board. Some of the questions Dawn alluded to concerned her positions on the rights of transgender students. It's part of a larger discussion Canby has been having for the past several months since the March City Council meeting, in which several citizens, including Stephanie Carlson, spoke against a proposed proclamation that would have recognized International Transgender Day of Visibility.
Second time's a charm. After the proposed measure for a new 5-year operating levy of 99 cents per $1,000 assessed valuation failed in May of 2018 by 9 votes, the Aurora Fire District opted to try again in this year's election. They had better luck this time around, as the measure passed by 236 votes. It will replace the current levy of 49 cents when it expires at the end of the year. Had the measure failed without any replacement, the district would have been facing up to 37% budget cuts. The district is thankful for the confidence our citizens have in us, Aurora Fire Chief Joshua Williams says. We are extremely excited for the future of the Aurora Fire District and the improved service we will begin to deliver. He said the only difference between this year's proposal and the one that failed last year was that the district made a much more concentrated effort to inform and engage voters, including holding several town hall-style Q&As, which Chief Williams admits probably would have been better attended if all three hadn't been held at the same night as Blazer games. The district also distributed flyers, shared information, and answered questions online and through social media. And Chief Williams even did an interview with some local news podcasts that you probably never heard of. "I believe this shows our effort in informing our citizens about the needs of the fire district was very impactful," Williams says. The district board of directors says the funds will allow Aurora Fire to greatly increase services, including being able to respond to calls 24 hours a day with career EMT firefighters for the first time in its history. The district responds to over 1,000 calls each year, which they say is a stretch for their current resources. "Most of our calls for service occur when there is no career staff on duty," Aurora Fire Chief Josh Williams says in a letter submitted to the county elections office explaining the proposal. Currently, there are only 4 career employees on duty Monday through Friday during regular business hours. Once the business office is closed, volunteers and students are the primary emergency responders. As in the past, Aurora Fire does rely on volunteers to bridge its funding gap, but the district says that the time commitments and other demands have reached a point where it is difficult to recruit and maintain volunteer firefighters. Funds from the levy will also be used to bolster this aspect of the district's service, paying for repairs, upgraded emergency equipment, and enhancements to the current student and volunteer program. On Christmas Day 2016, Oregon State Trooper Nick Cederberg found himself in a close quarters gunfight with a man suspected of murdering his wife. He was shot 12 times. In the face of impossible odds, and in what was surely received as a Christmas miracle to his family, friends, and OSP colleagues, Trooper Cederberg survived. And this week, for his incredible bravery and dedicated service, he was presented with the National Public Safety Officer Medal of Valor, the highest national award for valor a public safety officer can receive. As you've become accustomed to hearing on this local news podcast, here's the President of the United States of America.
That Christmas night, Nick took 12 bullets. After a very tough recovery, Nick survived, and Trooper Cederberg, we are very honored to have you with us in the White House. Thank you very much. Great job. He looks awfully good. 12 bullets. He looks good if he took no bullets, you know? Some pretty good doctors, I guess, right? Great job.
Nick, a U.S. Army veteran who was a 7-year veteran of the Oregon State Police at the time, has not yet been able to return to work due to the injuries he sustained 2.5 years ago. Nick initially spent 48 long days in the hospital and continues to fight for a full recovery. The Public Safety Officer Medal of Valor was created by Congress in 2001 to honor public safety officers who have exhibited exceptional courage, regardless of personal safety, in the attempt to save or protect human life.
Is 15 days too long to wait for a terminally ill patient who elects to use Oregon's Death with Dignity Act? Some lawmakers believe that sometimes it is. Senate Bill 579, which passed the Senate on a 16-11 vote last week, waives the 15-day waiting period between oral requests for life-ending medication that is currently required under the Oregon Death with Dignity Act. The waiver would be available only to terminal ill patients with fewer than 15 days to live, who are also capable of making the decision and who voluntarily request life-ending medication. Sometimes when a patient decides that they want to end their own pain and suffering with dignity and with the assistance of a physician, they don't have enough time to go through the entire process, said Senator Floyd Prezansky, a Democrat from Eugene. Often the end stages of terminal illness are the worst, and this provides an opportunity for those who are suffering and are capable of making this decision to utilize the legal option Oregon provides for them to have a dignified end. The Oregon Death with Dignity Act was enacted by voters in 1994 and implemented in 1997. Since that time, more than 2,200 prescriptions for lethal medication have been written, and 1,459 deaths resulted from those prescriptions. To use this avenue, a person must have a terminal illness and be capable of making his or her own decisions. Then the patient makes a series of voluntary requests. The patient is required to make 1 written and 2 oral requests. After the first oral request, the patient must wait another 15 days to make the second. After that, another 48 hours must pass between a patient's written request and prescribing life-ending drugs. Under Senate Bill 579, to be eligible to waive the 15-day wait, the attending physician must determine within reasonable medical judgment that the person will die within 15 days after making the initial request. The purpose of this legislation is to make sure a person who is terminally ill and in their final days can choose their own terms for how their life ends, Prezansky said. The voters gave patients this right 25 years ago. We want to allow those who are most likely to use this right the ability to do so if they choose. Senate Bill 579 now goes to the House of Representatives for consideration.
Police beat for the week of April 16th through the 29th. That's right, folks. It's another double serving for you. On April 16th at 10 a.m., report of money being stolen from the claw machines at the entry of the Camby Fred Meyer. Cheaters! Everyone knows you can steal the money. The point of the game is to claw at it. At April 17th at 5:04 a.m., police woke a sleeping man in front of a store on Northeast 2nd Avenue. The police notified him that he had been trespassed from the location and warned him that he would be arrested if returned. Later that day, several reports of overnight thefts from parked vehicles on 9th, 11th, and 12th Avenues and South Redwood Street. Some of the items were recovered from a nearby location. On April 19th at 6:12 p.m., police discovered that a woman involved in a vehicle crash on Southeast 1st Avenue the previous day had, and I'm using air quotes here, accidentally given them the incorrect number. Sure, we've never lied to the police before. Officers located and were able to obtain correct information to share with the other driver involved. On April 20th at 1:47 a.m., a driver was stopped on suspicion of drunken driving. The driver stated that she thought it would be safe since she was just a few blocks away. Then she threw up several times, according to the police report. Paramedics were called to evaluate her and did confirm that she wasn't sick, she was just really drunk. She was then arrested for a DUI and transported to Clackamas County Jail. On April 23rd, officers located several transients who were camped out underneath the bridge on Highway 99E. They were advised that they were trespassing and needed to dismantle their camps and move along. That night at 11:16 a.m., police conducted a traffic stop on Highway 99E. The driver was unlicensed and uninsured, but that's just the beginning. He was also found to be in possession of heroin, methamphetamine, loaded and uncapped needles, and numerous credit and gift cards that did not belong to him. I wonder if this might solve our mysterious gift card bandit, huh? On April 26th at 11:27 p.m., reports of three subjects actively trespassing on top of parked Union Pacific rail cars on Southeast 1st Avenue. Two individuals were both appearing to be under the influence of intoxicants and were arrested for criminal trespass and taken to jail. On April 27th at 8:47 a.m., reports of a loose dog attacking two cats on Southeast Township Road. An officer located and captured the dog and transported it to animal control. Knowing how cats are, they probably started the fight anyway. Finally, on April 29th at 4:14 a.m., a transient was sighted after officers found him camping under the Highway 99E bridge, a location where he had previously been warned he would be charged with criminal trespass if returned.
So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Camby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved them 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hills, NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
The great outdoors. Sometimes you just gotta get away to a place where life is simpler. The air is clean and the nearest ringing phone is about a million miles away. One of the best places that we found is My Cowboy Cabin near Joseph, Oregon, in the heart of the Eagle Cap Wilderness.
Eagle Cap is the largest unspoiled wilderness area in Oregon, with breathtaking views of granite mountains and crystal clear lakes, and more than 500 miles of trails to explore. It's one of the premier hiking, fishing, and hunting destinations in the Pacific Northwest. My Cowboy Cabin is open from Memorial Day weekend through Labor Day weekend, and can be reserved on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on availability. With a cabin that sleeps up to 8 people,
and also a teepee that sleeps 8 or more.
That's right. It's perfect for family vacations, retreats, reunions, and more. Find out more at mycowboycabin.com. please be advised that the following interview contains information about youth suicide that may be triggering to some listeners. Warm Summer Sun by Mark Twain. Warm summer sun, shine kindly here. Warm southern wind, blow softly here. Green sod above, lie light, lie light. Good night, dear heart. Good night. Good night. Last February, four Clackamas County teens took their own lives in the same week. Two were students at Canby High School. They left behind family, friends, an entire community, desperate for answers, reeling from the enormity and tragedy of their loss. But it's not just a Canby problem. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among Oregon youth. Only accidents kill more teens. The state's youth suicide rate is higher than the nation's and has been on the rise for almost a decade. Mental health professionals no longer see youth suicide as a private family matter, but as a public health crisis. They are imploring parents to talk openly to their kids and are calling on teenagers to help create awareness. We recently had the opportunity to talk with Canby High students and staff about their experience with last year's suicides. Here's what they had to say.
Talk about the experience of what it was like for you personally and for the school, for your friends to go through, and what's come since that, you know, the prevention efforts and stuff. So you're comfortable talking about that?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then, yeah, can you take us back to February of 2018 when maybe you first found out or what that was like?
That time was a little bit harder just because you would come to school and then there would be a bunch of people crying and you're like, I don't know why that is, and then you find out like, oh, someone just passed away or someone just committed suicide. So it was a harder time, and that was definitely a time to realize that the whole school kind of needs each other at the moment, because there's stuff going on and we need to figure out how to deal with it.
And it's kind of like, wow. And it's a really big wake-up call to the whole school and community that, you know, there's a problem and that needs to be addressed. And it kind of hits you hard, even if you don't know them personally, because, I mean, at least from when I did interact with him, he always seemed really happy and joyful and always kind of like light up the room, I guess, when you're with him. And so it makes you really think, you know, what was going on that his life that made him do that, because, you know, you really don't know what's going on in people's lives, and it's hard.
It's so hard, right, when it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'm the one of my main duties is student affairs and student management here. So I work in the student center, and that's sort of my realm. So, yes, I got the first phone call from the police, and then informed the administrative team, and then our principal, Mr. Greg Dinsa, informed the board and the superintendent and that kind of thing. And we called out the flight team, the Canby School District and Clackamas ESD partner together and have counselors that are specially trained to go to different schools in wake of different tragedies, whatever that might look like.
Yeah.
And so we called the flight team out, and they were here to support our students in the, you know, week-ish following the two deaths. And we would do that for, you know, any student or staff member death. And just, you know, there was a therapy dog on campus, and they did different art projects, and there was a safe room for students that were having difficulty processing, whether they knew the students or if they were triggered from another previous event or something like that. We just wanted to make sure that they had all the support that they needed. And it's a lot on our counseling staff, because they're trying to grieve at the same time helping our students, and there's obviously more students than they would normally see in a day, so it's just nice to have this extra supports in place.
People talk about this, the suicides and the tragedy, like it was pretty unprecedented, pretty bad, you know. I mean, is that from your perspective? Obviously, you have different crises that happen.
Yes, having two student deaths in a week is not something that I've experienced before. I've been in education for a long time. 20-something years, and I've never had two. Well, my first year of teaching, there were two students who died together in a car accident, but two separate incidents in a week's time is not a normal thing that happens.
It affected me personally because my cousin 2 years ago committed suicide, so it definitely... He was 17.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know. So it affected me that way just because it brought back memories of him. I don't know. It's still hard to deal with. Like the other day we had an assembly and that was really hard to get through. Just knowing that those people could still be here.
We prepared a statement to be read by teachers. Again, that's tricky too, because you want to honor the family's wishes and say as much as that they want to be said, but also want rumors not to get out there too, because there's a lot of that stuff that happens. So we read a statement in the teachers each and at a certain time of day read a statement that we had prepared so that the kids were aware of what was going on. But again, different kids have different reactions because of their personalities. They have different reactions because of their backgrounds. They have different reactions because of their relationship with the student. So you just have to try and support all of them and fill that need, whatever that looks like.
I feel like the school responded in a really good way. They understood that there was something going on. So we threw quite a few different campaigns out. Like we had I wasn't part of leadership at the time, so I don't really know all of it, but like a week later we all had bracelets that said like "You matter," and it was all like black and white. And then there was different things popped up around the school that was like, you need to like talk about it, and if you're having feelings about something, you need to go and talk to the school counselor or whatnot. So we ended up, the school ended up bringing up people and being able to understand that we're having a problem. We need to understand how to deal with it correctly.
It was just to raise awareness about, I mean, saying talk about it if you have problems. I mean, people are obviously scared.
Specifically about suicide and depression.
Yeah. And anxiety or things like that, that, you know, it's obviously a thing and people are scared to talk about it, but it's just encouraging people that they matter, and that their problems matter, and that even if other people are experiencing it, we want to be there along with you to help you with that.
I think there's been some efforts around bullying and stuff as well. Can you talk about that?
Yeah.
Is that something that you felt was needed or that you've...
Definitely. And so this year we launched our Other Shoes campaign, which is basically just seeing what's like in other people's shoes. And you kind of looking back to last year's campaign, which again was great. But it's also kind of like, obviously suicide is a thing and it's a real thing. And that it's almost bullying and things like that are almost inevitable, unfortunately. Yeah. But kind of what our assembly during the Other Shoes campaign was saying, what gets in the way of kindness. Mm-hmm. And so when you have things like bullying and things like that, what can the people do to stand up for that and to be kind to others? And people are often scared to be kind to others and go out of their way to say things to people they don't know and strangers like that, but it's really important to so people understand that they matter, because they always say like it's not the people that are bullying aren't the problem, but it's the people that are doing nothing about it. And so I think that's a really important message that we were trying to convey this year.
We initially partnered with Providence right away. We were aware that Newburgh High School had had a similar situation the year previous and that they had partnered with Providence Health Systems. They were able to bring resources, extra counselors, some education for staff about what things to look like. So we had some connection there. So we called them. They came in and did a training for our staff about sort of just mental health and things to look for and when to refer a student to counseling or whatever that looks like. And it also just a chance to ask questions and come together as a staff, as the staff has to process too. We also have some counseling available through Providence, and so we had that partnership. Cambie Community started the Suicide Prevention Task Force, which is great. They looked at sort of community resources and partnered with Clackamas County Mental Health. We had the Talk About It campaign, which happened last spring, which was a campaign that we just started to get kids just more aware and to encourage friends that are struggling to reach out for help and to know what supports are in place. And then looked at it as a long-term culture issue, because we don't want to just be reactive to this. We want to be proactive. And the research says that you really have to create a culture of caring and kindness in order to proactively help people that are struggling with mental health stuff. So we sort of set steps forward for that. And the community helped us by raising some funds, which allowed us to have sort of a bigger campaign this year. So we're really grateful to have such a supportive community for that. Yeah. And just looked at different programs. We've also purchased a mental health curriculum that's going to be taught at our 5th through 12th, I believe, that is aligned so the kids are getting the same message, age-appropriate message, in their health classes or from their counselors from 5th through 12th grade. And not that we weren't teaching that, but it's really important to have targeted, aligned, vertically aligned curriculum, and that all students are seeing the same thing in our schools. Yeah. So that was something else we were able to do as a response with the help of the community's funds.
Yes. How do you change a culture? What is that effort?
It's a great question. I wish I had a magic wand.
Right.
I just think it's piece by piece and student by student. And it's not just a week. I mean, we did have a kindness week and it was great, but that's just a start or something for a big cultural shift. And it's just raising awareness and understanding of what other people are going through, and empathy and kindness. And you do little things along the way and you start to see a shift. Our student leaders were fantastic. We have a couple of leadership classes here that have done different things along the way. Different clubs partnered with us, so more and more kids are talking about it in their classrooms. We had advisory lessons so that each kid was exposed to it, and you just, you know, chip away. And again, I don't think our culture was necessarily broken, but it can always get better, and you can always be kinder and help teenagers as they're growing understand what it's like to walk in someone else's shoes, which was the point of the other shoes tag. The kids came up with that. They were super proud of it.
Yeah, it's cool. I do like that as well.
But having that, like, that campaign and having that, like, the Kindness Week or the Other Shoes Week, that was helpful for to realize that there is other people out there that could help you out instead of you just being on your own.
Yeah.
So, like, it would be, like, You Matter Monday. So, like, bringing attention to, like, the person that is struggling either with suicide or struggling with knowing that someone has done something like that. And then also we had other, like, other days to represent other things. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you, like, need a friend or if you you need to realize what, like, another person's perspective is, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Has this, the kindness campaign, been the main thing that you worked on, or that the leadership team that the ASB has done this year? Has it been its main focus? Maybe not just the kindness campaign, but the, you know, suicide prevention and that effort in general?
It's not, I mean, we have so much other stuff going on with homecoming and things like that, okay. But I think which is a lot of work and all that stuff, but I think the overarching, like, idea that making it a place for everyone feels accepted and welcome is kind of just sort of the theme, I guess you could say, of all the projects we've been working on. Even like homecoming, you have things like sort of like, even we've noticed a lack of attendance from the Hispanic community at our school dances, and so just incorporating Hispanic music, and so that you get more of my peers of that group and going and things like that, is just making sure that everyone feels a part of things.
Yeah.
And
cool.
That's kind of a theme we try to carry out for everything we've done.
I think the ultimate goal was to realize that there's bad things out there, like suicide or bullying or whatnot, but we need to figure out a different way to go about it than just saying that there is something and say that this is what we could do about it. That could be differently, that they could prevent it from happening instead of just saying this is bad, you shouldn't do it.
changes that you've seen?
I think there is a feeling of care. I think that the school community feels supported by the larger community, which is great. And I also think that their kids are more aware of resources and kids are looking out for their friends. If they're seeing a student that is struggling, they're more apt to refer them to an adult that can help. And, you know, we're still working on making this a very, very caring place. It is a high school. Kids are growing and they make poor choices every once in a while, but certainly we're going in the right direction to get sort of that culture of kindness here at the school.
Yeah, I think just the general, I guess, culture around the high school is sort of shifting.
Yeah.
Which is cool to see. I can't think of any specific examples out the top of my head right now, but yeah, I've definitely just noticed a general sort of, like, I guess just a conscious effort that, like, this is a problem and that, you know, just being careful about what you say and how it could affect other people.
Sure.
Yeah, I feel like there is definitely a change even just from last year. Mm. Like, just the other day I saw someone like running down the hall to try to get Trevor Lockwood, which is the school counselor, you know, like to like be like, hey, this is, I know it's your lunchtime, but I really need to talk to you. So I saw that the other day, and like stuff like that, like being able to just understand, like, yeah, like I might need help.
What's next?
That's a great question. We are working on getting more mental health support in the after school or in the summertime for our kids, because we realize that we have licensed social worker on staff now during the school year, but what about in the afternoons or kids that don't want to go during the day because they don't want to miss their classes, or in the summertime where, you know, school's closed and there's a void. So we are working with Clackamas County Mental Health. Kathy Sullivan is I don't even know what her title is. Incoming Director of Student Services. She's something else this year, but she's helping us partner with Clackamas County Mental Health to see what resources are out there, just to make sure that kids are supported all year long because there's no school in the summer. So, overall, and I don't necessarily think Canby has a deficit in school culture, but I think that right now in our society, we have a lot of mental health struggles with people. Anxiety and depression are rampant out there. And so the high school is sort of a microcosm of the society, and you're going to see that reflected here.
Something I think is really important in terms of shifting a culture and building this culture of care is civility. And our district is, as far as we know, the only one in the state that has an actual board policy on civility. And that's really important, particularly in this time of just a lot of divisiveness in our country. Any post you see online, there's constant controversy, a push and pull all the time. And so we're really focused on not even just teaching our kids and making sure our staff believes this, but our entire community. You know, there's some nuances with it, but in terms of what it looks like in our buildings, in our community, how we treat one another online, how we care for one another, it's a really important aspect of this culture shift. And I would challenge all of the grown-ups in our community to learn from our kids and learn from our leadership students who want you to understand what it's like to walk in others' shoes and on how to treat other people so they know that you care about them. I think it's a lesson that a lot of adults, not just in our community, in our country, in our world, could really learn from our kids. And I think, that they've got a lot to offer and we should take advantage of that.
J.
True story. When we first started the Can Be Now podcast, we were looking to buy some stickers. Just something to help us get our name out there. We didn't have a lot of money, so we tried to do everything as cheaply as possible online. We wound up with 1,000 of these teeny tiny cheap looking stickers. Not exactly the impressive swag we were hoping for, but you know, you get what you pay for.
Yes, you do. If we had been smart, we would have gone to see Carrie at Promotional Strategies. She's a real life human and a creative genius who would deliver practical, strategic ways to promote your business on any budget. If you're looking for high quality swag that you can be proud to see your logo on, Promotional Strategies is where you want to go. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined. There's always excitement in Oregon as the seasons change and the weather gets warmer and the rain goes away, at least for a few months. But in Canby this spring, there has especially been a lot of excitement about the new look Canby Farmers Market. It's under new management, Alexis Purcell, who's also the manager of the very successful market in Wilsonville. She's been hard at work this past few months, lining up dozens of new vendors and entertainment for what looks to be a great run here in Canby at the downtown Canby Farmers Market. And she joins us on the line now. Alexis, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Good. Thank you for having me.
So we're one weekend. You had your big launch, your first Saturday last weekend. How did it go?
We did. We had an amazing time. We had a really, really great turnout. Lots of local people. And it seems like everybody was super happy. So that was always good.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. And you had, what, about like 30, 35 vendors for that first day. Is that right?
We did. We were short a handful. So it put us at about 30.
Okay.
So this weekend, we're really hoping for 35 to 40.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, it's a Memorial Day weekend, a big deal. Probably a lot of folks out enjoying what hopefully will be some nice weather. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, so tell me a little bit about yourself and kind of how you approach. This isn't your first rodeo. You also do the Wilsonville Farmers Market. It's been, you know, my kids and I went to the Canby Farmers Market pretty much every weekend last year and enjoyed it. But it seems like it's kind of been a little bit of a tough market for Farmers Market here in Canby for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Canby people definitely want a really good farmers market. I know it's super fun. It's great for families to go out and enjoy. Mm-hmm. I really want to boost it, make it big, make it something you can count on every weekend to go get your fresh flowers and your vegetables and have some fun with the family and grab a coffee and just kind of hang out and enjoy the sunshine and make it a good time.
Yeah, cool. And from what I understand, and I've seen the list of vendors that you've been sharing, you really have a focus on some of the like food trucks and food vendors, right?
Yeah, we do. We will hopefully, fingers crossed, we have Killer Burger that's going to be joining us here in a couple weeks. We had a homemade tamales, and we're working on a few others to get it started.
Cool. Is that something that you find to just be a nice draw or a nice way to round out the appeal for people to come out if there's, you know, some new food they can try?
Yeah, definitely. Like, it draws the people in, and it's something you can count on for breakfast or early lunch and go from there.
Cool. And you're doing entertainment as well throughout the summer?
Yeah, for the most part, we'll have live music every week and face painting for the kiddos and stuff like that. So hopefully we can get a magician out. And but we're trying to work on a dog days of summer, and we'll have a bring your dog to the market day.
Oh, cool. Cool. That'll be fun. Get really the whole family involved at that point.
That's right.
Cool. Okay, well, let's go over the details. Hours, it's obviously every Saturday, 9 to 1, I think, are the hours?
Yeah, we're going to do every Saturday, 9 to 1, and starts right on time.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. I think there's a website and social media as well for where folks can learn more.
Yeah. Definitely. You can always find us on Facebook. Facebook's my big one, my easiest one. I can get back to people right away and stuff like that. So if anybody has questions, shoot us a message on Facebook. We'll be happy to respond. And if you're a vendor and you want to reach out to us, we'd love to reach out to you as well.
Cool. Still taking vendor apps?
We are.
Cool. Well, thank you so much, Alexis, for talking to us. And thanks for your hard work to breathe new life into our Canby Farmers Market. It's awesome.
Yeah. No problem. We look forward to working with everybody and seeing everyone throughout the summer.
Absolutely. We'll see you out there.
All right. Thanks, Tyler.
This weekend in Canby, auditions start this weekend for the Canby Community Theater Summer Show. It's their 25th anniversary, and they are celebrating with a review show of pretty much everything they've ever done, from the operetta Little Mary Sunshine to the rock and roll of All Shook Up. Dance auditions will be from 9 a.m. to noon on Saturday, and vocal monologue auditions will be from 1 to 5 Saturday and 6 to 9 on Monday and Tuesday. To sign up, visit canbytheater.com, that's theater spelled R-E, or email canbyaudition@gmail.com. Also this Saturday, Bridging Cultures Canby is kicking off their Saturdays in the Park at Locust Street Park from 11:30 to 1:30. Come out for delicious food, fun activities, and music. Storytime for ages 3 to 6 will be at 11 a.m. on Friday, while Storytime in Spanish will be at 11 on Saturday at the library. Intercambio is also at 11 on Saturday. Come test your English or Spanish skills with native speakers. On Sunday from 1:30 to 2:30, it's your last chance to read to Digby the dog. Digby has been specially trained to be an extra good listener and won't judge anyone's reading mistakes. Sign up for a 15-minute time slot or just drop in during the program. Also at 1:30, Dungeons & Dragons. No experience necessary. Drop-ins welcome. Sunday programming is ending at the end of June, so enjoy it while you can. On Monday at 11 a.m., a Memorial Day remembrance ceremony will be held at Zion Memorial Cemetery, hosted by the Canby American Legion Post 122, and featuring State Representative Christine Drazen and City Councilor Tracy Hensley. For the latest events or to submit your own, visit canbynowpod.com/calendar.
More than 1.2 million Americans receive internet, TV, and telephone services from community cooperatives like Direct Link. They believe that their role revolves around partnerships. Whether sponsoring a local event, hosting educational classes, or investing in fiber internet technology, Direct Link is here for our community because they are a part of our community.
Beyond just working in Canby, most of DirectLink's employees live here as well. DirectLink's investment in the local area reaches past business interests and extends into the everyday lives of neighbors, friends, and families. Visit them online at directlink.coop to learn more about their communication services and community activities. Beer is practically an art form in the Pacific Northwest, and the FOB Taproom in Canby is one of the best places to enjoy all your old favorites and your new favorites. They have a constantly rotating selection of 36 of the best craft beers, ciders, and wines from right here in Oregon and around the world. Hey, Tyler, do you know what FOB stands for? That's right. It's Friends of Beer, and that's what they are.
Oh, well, the FOB Taproom also hosts an awesome trivia night on Wednesdays with tap takeovers and new release parties every month. There's always something going on, so come on by. Find them at the Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway and on Facebook and Instagram.
See you at the FOB. And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Alyssa Showalter, Trevor Taylor, Carrie Sloan, and Autumn Foster. And to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. If you liked what you just heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. In our next show, it's Memorial Day. Time to pause and remember all those who have paid the ultimate price in service to our nation. We'll bring you the story of a local family with patriarchs who served in both world wars and what they're doing to help keep their memory and legacy of service alive. If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow.